could be said than I have time to say. It's a great little book, just four chapters, quite readable over a cup of coffee sometime at home. You might want to do that, even though we've already started. You might enjoy doing that. But if just in case you weren't here last week, just a little bit of backdrop. The time that in the Bible timeline is the time of the judges. In fact, the previous book is the book of Judges. And the time of Judges is a time of turmoil in Israel. It's a time of real ups and downs for God's people. It's a time of chaos at many points, people turning away from God, doing their own thing, not going God's way, but just going their own way. And time and time again, God has to punish the people to help them come back to their senses. Time and time again, he has to raise up a judge that can rescue them and bail them out of the horrendous situation they've got themselves into. And it's a lawless time in many ways. And yet, as we'll see today, there are people who are God-fearers, people who are following God, trying to do the right thing. Have you ever wondered what can God possibly be doing in a situation that you face? You think, how can God be using this? What possible way can good come from this? Well, we'll think a little bit about that question by the time we get to the end, I think. Now, there's three things I want us to notice this morning as we look at Ruth 2 together. If you've got one of the sheets, you'll see on the back, I've jotted down three things I want us to notice. And the first one, and each one's to do with a character, really, Boaz and then Ruth and Naomi. And the first thing I want us to notice, or person I want us to notice, is Boaz, who's a godly man doing the right thing. And we meet him right at the start of the chapter in verse 1, don't we? Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And then it's repeated in verse 2 that he's from the clan of Elimelech. That's a very significant thing as the story proceeds. He's a relative, somewhat distant, but a relative. Now, Boaz, the name means something like strong or strength or something like that. But and Bible names often are important, aren't they? But actually, in this case, we get a little bit more information about him and about his character. He was described as a man of standing in verse 1. He's a man of standing. Or the ESV version of the Bible says he's a worthy man. It's got the idea of excellence and wealth and position, a man of character, perhaps, a man of standing. And we find out he has a field, doesn't he? Because as the story goes on, we find out he has a field or several fields. He's a farmer. Now, this is a love story in many ways, the book of Ruth. And the fact that we know that these few little facts about Boaz means he could use the best chat-up line ever. He's eligible to use the best chat-up line ever. Now, one or two people's ears have perked up. One or two people are thinking, I don't need to know this. I'm at the stage of life, I don't need to hear it. But he can use the best chat-up line ever. Do you know what that is, boys? Best chat-up line that a guy can use? I have a job. I have a job. It's great. He's got a job, hasn't he? He's got a field. He's a farmer. He's got some kind of income. He's going to be able to support a family one day. But he's not just a guy with a field. He's a guy with some depth. You see, verse 4. When Boaz arrived in Bethlehem, he greeted the harvesters. Sorry, the Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they called back. Is that how your boss arrives at the office? Or where you work? If you're working? Or when you used to work? He's not the average guy, is he? He's not the average guy. Boaz is the real deal. He's not just a Sunday Christian. He's an all-week Christian, isn't he? I know he's in the Old Testament, so you know he's not a Christian, but he's a, you know, he's one of God's people. He arrives, the Lord be with you. That's the thing he says. And he immediately is sharp. He knows what's going on with his business. He immediately notices Ruth in verse 5. And he's wondering, who is this woman? And she is in the field gleaning. Now, if we look back in the Old Testament to Deuteronomy 24. Just a few pages back, it tells us a little bit about this. It's on page 202, if you're using one of the church Bibles, 202. Deuteronomy 24. But halfway down, just above halfway down, column 2, verse 19, Deuteronomy 24, it says this: when you're harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back to get it. Leave it for the alien, that's a foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. It goes on to talk about a similar thing with olive branches. This is something God had put in place. Of course, this is a time in society when there's no unemployment handouts, or there's no none of the benefits that we are used to in this country. And God had put in a place, a system, where people who, well, they would have to work for it, but people could get some food. Maybe a little bit in the corner of the field, a little bit that have been spilled on the ground. You could gather it up and get some food. And that's exactly what Ruth's doing. She's gone to do this very thing. She's at the bottom of society, isn't she? She's at the bottom of the heap in society. And Boaz is doing this. It's an instruction in the Old Testament. But knowing what we know about the time of the judges, we can't assume that every farmer in Israel would be doing this. It's a lawless time. It's a time when not everyone's doing what God says. But Boaz is. He's doing what the law says. So here we have this situation. We have... you know, Boaz has just arrived at the field in his 50 grand Range Rover. He's got out, hasn't he? He's got his, you know, barber jacket and his posh wellies. He's a man who's rich, who's powerful, a man of influence. Surprisingly, he's a bachelor. We don't know the backstory there, what's been going on. But he seems very eligible. And here's Ruth. She's the immigrant. She's poor. In fact, she's hungry. She has no standing in this society. She's new in town. She's not anyone's wife. She's not anyone's daughter. She has no protection in that society. She used to be part of a weird cult. We saw a little bit about that last week. She's only been a Christian 5 minutes. She's not even a virgin. This girl is vulnerable. This girl is vulnerable. And some men would have seen this as an opportunity to take advantage. Some men are predators. Girls, beware. But Boaz isn't that guy. And guys, don't be that guy. Boaz isn't that guy. And what does he do in this situation? Well, he's not going to take advantage, is he? What does he say? Verse 8. In chapter 1. Verse 8, in chapter 2, Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Do not go and glean in another field. Don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls." In fact, there's a mention at the end, Naomi mentions it could be dangerous in another field. She's, you know, it's a bit of a dangerous step she's taking going out into the field. She is vulnerable. And Boaz knows that. He says, "Stay here. You'll be safe here." He orders her protection. He speaks to his guys. He's got working there. Says nothing's going to happen to this girl. Okay, guys? Nothing's going to happen to her. He tells her that she can help herself to the drinks that are on offer for the workers. In that culture, actually, normally would have been maybe the girls providing the drinks for the men who were working. But he says, no, you can go and help yourself. And actually, verse 14... second half of verse 14, verse 15, she got up to glean. Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. Don't rebuke her." So there's the letter of the law. We saw that in Deuteronomy. Leave some stuff. Boaz has gone way beyond that, isn't he? Boaz is a generous guy, and he's saying, do you know what? We're not just going to go with the letter of the law. We're going to go with the whole spirit of the law. It's to look after people in exactly this situation. That's what we're going to do. Now, Ruth is puzzled. See, in verse 10, at this she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you've noticed me, a foreigner?" She's puzzled. She's thankful, but she's puzzled. "Why are you doing this?" is the question of verse 10. "Why would you do this for me?" Now, can I just say, girls, and particularly if you're a single girl, Ruth is smart. Be like Ruth. "Oh, he's been so nice to me. He's bought me some gifts. He's so kind." You've got to have in the back of your mind, where's this going? Why is he doing this? What's going on here? Ruth actually asks him, "Why are you doing this? What's the story?" But Boaz doesn't have any dodgy motives. Verse 11, Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland, you came to live with a people you did not know before." He hasn't got any dodgy motives. In fact, we'll find out in chapter 3 that he's surprised when he finds out that she might even be interested in him. He's not expecting anything to be going on. But he's heard about Ruth's conversion to the God of Israel. He's heard about how she's looked after Naomi. And he says, "Do you know what? I've heard what you've done, and I'm going to do the little bit I can." And then, verse 12, he prays for her. He prays for her. Girls, you want to find a guy like this, don't you? He prays for her. He prays for her. Maybe some of you have found a guy like this. Well done. He says, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've come to take refuge." He prays God will richly reward her for what she's done. That's his prayer for her. And Ruth is able to sum it up in verse 13. She says, "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. You've given me comfort. You've spoken kindly to your servant, though I don't even have the standing of one of your servant girls. I am the bottom of the heap. Yet you've given comfort. You've been kind to me." She sums it up, doesn't she? Now, I wonder if you know who this guy is. Joel's going to leap into action. There we are. So Joel said to me, "You can't put him up in connection with Boaz. You can't put him. If you don't know, that's Colin Firth. Is that right, girls? Yeah, Colin Firth. And he plays Mr. Darcy in Pride and Prejudice, the BBC adaptation a few years ago. And he's a bit moody and a bit grumpy at the start. And a bit sort of sinister. Is there something dodgy about this character? By the end of the story, we realise actually some of his motives have been very good. He's a bit more honourable than we thought. And a lot of young ladies that I know think, where are the guys like this? Where are the guys like this? We don't know if he's a Christian. But do you know what? Boaz is a fantastic guy, isn't he? He's a fantastic guy. He's unusual in that he's a Bible hero who seems that the Bible press about him is all positive. Often, even some of the greatest heroes in the Bible, Abraham, David, there's something slightly not right. And in some cases, something terrible. You know, David murders somebody. He commits adultery. But he's still a sort of great man in many ways. Boaz just seems to do the right thing, and the right thing, and the right thing. He's a great guy. He's been a real gentleman. He's been a man of chivalry, really, old-fashioned ideas. He's not looked down on this girl. He's treated her as a sister, which is what the New Testament says, guys, how we should be treating the girls. He's looked out for her. He's protected her. Now, it's a bit of a minefield for us guys, isn't it, these days? Because some women just want to be treated exactly like a man. And that's maybe because they've not been to things where there's lots of men together, which some of the guys will have been. You think, you don't want to be involved in this kind of thing. It's goofy stuff goes on. But it can be a bit of a minefield when we're trying to treat women in the right way. I heard a great story, you might have heard me say this before, of somebody who held open a door for a lady, and she said, "I hope you're not doing that because I'm a woman." And he said, "No, I'm doing it because I'm a gentleman." That's the difference, isn't it? So he in no way is looking down on Ruth, is he? In no way is trying to belittle her, but he is looking out for her. He does know it's dangerous, and he's trying to protect her. Guys, we need to do that for our sisters, don't we? Well, that was Boaz, and he's a great guy, even better than Mr. Darcy. We can get rid of Darcy, I think, now, because the second person we're going to meet is Ruth. She's a godly woman doing the right thing. Here's a picture of somebody picking up stuff after the harvest, maybe. And there's a few things that we notice about Ruth. We've already seen some great things of her character in chapter 1. But we find out she's a hard worker. And the hard work gets noticed. See verse 6. The foreman replied when Boaz is asked, "Who is this?" It says, "She's the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi." She's asked permission to do this. She's asked if she could do, you know, the Deuteronomy thing and glean. She went into the field, verse 7, went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. Presume that's shelter from the sun. You know, this is the Middle East, it's blazing sun. She's been a hard worker. And actually in verse 17 we discover she goes back and works hard all afternoon as well. And so she's able to bring home a huge amount. Verse 17, she gleaned in the field till evening. Then she threshed the barley she gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. And in the footnote there, it says that's about 3/4 of a bushel. That maybe doesn't help us, but it does say 22 litres. So it's maybe about a shopping trolley full. I've got another picture, I think, Joe, of somebody trying to carry home a huge amount. You don't see that in this country much, do you? But in some parts of the world, you would. You wonder how she got this home, all this grain, but she has. It's not bad for a day's work, is it? They're going to be able to eat for a little while with that kind of haul. And that was just from one day. She's even taken home the leftovers from a picnic that she had been given. Verse 18, she takes home some of what she'd been eating at lunchtime for Naomi. Ruth is a real Proverbs 31 woman. I don't know if you know Proverbs 31. Guys, if you're looking for a wife and you don't know Proverbs 31, you need to get really familiar with it. Because it's a great list of what to be looking for in a godly wife. But Ruth's a real Proverbs 31. Some people are looking it up now. I'm not waiting till I get home. She's a real Proverbs 31 woman. She loves God. We've seen she's done the right thing. She's looking after Naomi. She's working hard. She's doing what she can. She's at the bottom of society. But she's doing what she can. She's not cutting corners. What work is open to an immigrant person with no standing in the society, no family connections, not a virgin? Well, we can maybe imagine what work some men would want to put her into. She's polite. Verse 10, she falls on the floor in front of Boaz. That's a culturally appropriate thing. It would seem a bit weird to us, wouldn't it? But it's culturally appropriate. She's polite. She's not throwing herself at him. She's polite. And notice this, girls. She's been working all day in a muddy field. You know, she'll have her hair up in a ponytail or something, won't she? She's sweaty. She's wearing her scruffiest dress, if she even has more than one dress. But it's a character that gets noticed, isn't it? It's a character that gets noticed. Now, I'm not saying don't, you know, try and dress nice sometimes or whatever. But actually, it's a character that shows through, isn't it? we've already seen that Ruth's a wise woman in chapter 1 because she's heading towards God, not away from him. And as we get to know her a bit, she just gets better, doesn't she? But she is a nobody in Bethlehem. 4 times in this chapter, it reminds us that she's from Moab. In verse 2, in verse 6, in verse 10, and verse 21, she's described as the Moabitess, or described as a foreigner. She's not from around these parts. She is a nobody. But she's done the wise thing. Verse 12. Boaz says, "May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Now, God doesn't have wings, but it's that idea, isn't it, of, as I said last week, the mother hen gathering the chicks for protection, or some other kind of bird gathering. That's what she's done. She's run to God. She's taken protection under him. You would imagine that back in Moab, there wasn't this rule about leaving grain around in the fields for people. She's already experiencing some of the blessing of being under God's good protection. So Ruth is a godly woman doing the right thing. Third thing I want us to notice, and third person that we notice, is Naomi. And she's a woman who's starting to see God doing his thing. Verse 18, Ruth gets back to town and gets back to Naomi, to her mother-in-law, and they have a big debriefing session. There's a lot of chatting going on in the book of Ruth, because, you know, two of the main characters are women, I think. So there's a lot of chatting going on, and they have a big debrief, as you would expect. Nothing wrong with that. And we get verse 20, just amazing words from Naomi. Verse 20, Naomi says, "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." And she added, "This man is our close relative. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers." Why are those amazing words about what God's been doing in this situation? Well, because they're said by the woman who in chapter 1, if you were here last week, said verse 20 and 21 of chapter 1. She said, "Do you know what? Don't call me Naomi, a name that means sweetness. Call me Mara. That means bitter. Because I'm bitter about what's happened. I'm bitter about what God's allowed." But here in verse 20, "He's not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead." Now, who has not stopped showing kindness? Is she talking about Boaz? Or is she talking about God? Let's read it again. "The Lord bless him," she says. Presumably that's Boaz she's talking about, because verse 19, Ruth says, "The name of the man I worked with today was Boaz." "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He," is that Boaz or God? "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." And how is he showing kindness to the dead? I think it's deliberately ambiguous. I think it can apply to Boaz, but it also can apply to God. I think both are showing kindness in this situation. And why is it kindness to the living? Well, obviously, it's feeding them. But why is it kindness to the dead? Well, there's a glimmer of hope here that the family line might not die out. That Naomi's husband's family name and her son's family name might not die out. There's a little glimmer of hope for the future. This guy's not an immediate, Boaz, not an immediate relative, but he is part of the right clan. So described as a close relative. He's a kinsman redeemer. Now, what does that mean? Well, kinsman, he's part of the right clan, and redeemer. There used to be a shop on Botry Gate called Cash Converters. I'm not sure it's still there. Is it? Has it moved somewhere, or... I think there's a shop on Lowther Street now that does a similar thing anyway. Cash Converters, it used to be just opposite Hebron along a bit. And you could go in and with your Sega Mega Station or something, because it was a while ago. And they'd give you 20 quid for it, and they'd put it in the window with a sign on it saying 40 quid. And But they'd only do that after a couple of weeks, because you had a chance, you could go back get it back, I think. You could just sell them stuff straight away, but you could also borrow money against stuff that you owned there. It's not a new idea. If you go back with your money and you say, actually, I want it back, you're redeeming it, aren't you? You're paying the money and you're getting it back. You're redeeming it. Well, here in the Old Testament, there's a link with the land. Remember, God's people have been given a promised land, and each tribe was given a section of that land. Within the tribes, clans were given sections, and it went down. Families were given sections. Naomi's husband, Elimelech, had a section of land. And if you fell on hard times, you could sell your land, but you always had an option of buying it back, or a family member did, because this was the land that had been given. And so somebody who is a relative would have an option of buying back the land that belonged to Naomi's family, thereby keeping it in the family, keeping it in the clan. And we'll see a little bit more about that over the next 2 weeks. But it turns out Boaz falls into this category. He's the right type of person, the right relative, has the right connections to the family to be able to be one of these kinsmen redeemer. Not just a redeemer, he's a kinsman. He's part of the family, the extended family. Well, what's going on? Well, Naomi's starting to see, I think, God at work in some pretty dire circumstances. You notice what it said back in verse 3 of chapter 2. Just at the very start of the day when she goes out to work, she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in the field belonging to Boaz. As it turned out. I think the writer of Ruth is wanting us to say, oh, you know, as luck would have it. Of course, we don't believe in luck as Christian people, do we? We believe in a God who's in charge of things. As it turned out, she ended up in just the right field, with just the right guy. And I think Naomi's starting to see it, isn't she? She's starting to see what might be possible. Now, I think I have a picture of some tapestry. I'm not big into tapestry myself. Maybe you are. We went to see the Bayeux Tapestry when we were on holiday this year. It's just near the ferry. We were on our way back to the boat and we went to see it. It was a bit smarter than this. I'm not a big expert on tapestry, but I know that you can do tapestry on a loom. And you thread stuff through, don't you? And you can make something brilliant. But if you were to lie on the floor under the loom and look up at the underside of what's being made, it might look a bit like this, because this is actually the back of a bit of tapestry. It's got... Ooh, can we go back? It's got bits of string sticking out, and it's a bit of a mess. Then, now we can see the front. This is a... I don't know what it is. Some kind of, you can put your newspapers in it maybe, I don't know, thing. And when you see the actual front side, well, it's more beautiful, isn't it? It's not such a mess as the back was. Well, it can be a bit like that as we see God at work, can't it? So often we're lying under the loom, seeing the backside. We see all the loose ends. We see all the string hanging out. We don't see the picture clearly. Maybe it doesn't look very beautiful. In fact, maybe it looks pretty ugly. But God, looking down from above, he sees the beautiful picture that he's making. So maybe Naomi's starting to see the wheels in motion. She's starting to see what God's doing. She's starting to see maybe the answer to Boaz's prayer that God would richly reward Ruth. Well, our time's nearly gone, but what does this have to say for us in 2011 in Carlisle? These events happened 3,000 years ago that we've just read about. 3,000 years ago. What can I say? If you're a foreigner here this morning, Ruth's a foreigner in the land, isn't she? If you're a foreigner here this morning, you are welcome here. You are welcome. If you're from another country, you are welcome. But you could be a foreigner in another sense, couldn't you? Because she was also from another religion, and she'd come to God's people. She'd come to find out more. She was wanting to grow in understanding about the God of the Bible. You might be a foreigner in that sense this morning, and you're welcome as well. Ruth found a place of safety and protection, didn't she? And we as a church, we want to be a place of love and justice, a place of generosity, a place of kindness, a place of redemption. A place where you can't just hear about Boaz, who's a pretty cool guy, but you can hear about Jesus, who's so much better than Boaz. And we're going to find out more and more about Jesus in chapter 3 and 4 over the next 2 weeks. So if you're a foreigner or if you're new to Christian things, you know, we want to be like this for you. But what about us who are part of the church here, who are regulars perhaps? Well, imagine if Bethlehem had been full of Boazes. Imagine if all the farmers in Bethlehem were like Boaz. Well, maybe some of them were, I don't know. But if they were, there'd have been a queue of Ruths from Moab, wouldn't there? People would have been queuing round the block to experience this kind of generosity. Imagine Carlisle being impacted by us. As we take Jesus' love out, as we're kind of Ruth-type women and Boaz-type guys, or maybe better, as we're a bit like Jesus, as we are able to be a generous blessing to the city and a great advert for the God that we follow. As you maybe heard in the prayers earlier, this week we had a chance to welcome some pupils from Nelson Tomlinson School. They're doing GCSE religious studies, and they came along. There's about 65 altogether, staff and pupils, that came this week to the building. And I was able to tell them a little bit about what we are trying to do as a church and what we believe as a church. And I was able to talk a little bit about how we want to be, not just about folk who come, but how we're a blessing beyond the church, how we try and be a blessing. I was able to talk about people who are involved in local charities, or are serving with Citizens Advice, or have been helping people who don't have English as a first language to learn a bit of English. But I'm sure there's more that we could be doing, isn't there, in terms of serving the city. There's a great website called doit.org.uk. I'll maybe put it on the church website, just the link to it. But it lists volunteering opportunities that there are. Not Christian volunteering opportunities, just any old volunteering opportunities. So not all of them would be appropriate for everyone. But you can put in Carlisle there, and it'll list the nearly 400 volunteer opportunities that there are. Well, we as a church, we want to continue, don't we, being a bit like Boaz was. We continue to be generous in our events that we try and put on to bless the community. Soon we'll be gearing up for our carol service, won't we? This is not just for us, is it? It's something that we're doing that we hope can be a great blessing to many as we celebrate Jesus' birth. We want to be generous with our time, don't we? Generous with our money. We want to be working away, if you like, on the messy underside of the tapestry, knowing that God, who's in charge, is the kind of craftsman who's got it all covered from above.